Welcome to the Blazers Edge podcast. I'm Tara, and today I'm without my partner, Joe, who is off on an adventure in the Alaska wilderness. She will be back next month. But don't fear, I have a very special guest joining me today and who's going to help keep things going. Before I introduce him, let me remind you all that you can subscribe to the podcast with either Stitcher or iTunes, or just go to our home site, blazersedge.com, where you will find links to all the podcasts and all sorts of great Blazers content. Right now, Blazers Edge is celebrating 10 years of the site, so we've got some really fun features going on right now, like who are people's favorite players, who are the favorite villains of the last 10 years, things like that. So if you haven't checked it out, go see what's happening on Blazers Edge. It might be the off season, but we've got lots of new content going up every day. So, without any further delay or banter, I will introduce my guest. Now, you don't hear his voice very often, but he is a key member of the Trail Blazers radio broadcast team. For 25 years, he's been with the team running the show behind the scenes for more than 2,000 games. He is the Captain Rich Patterson, the radio network producer for the Portland Trail Blazers. Welcome to the show, Rich.
Thank you very much for having me.
I'm so excited that you made time to talk with me today. I have lots of questions about what your job is for the Trailblazers, and I can't wait to hear any stories you want to tell us about all your years that you've spent with the team.
And there are stories to tell. We could write a book, but maybe some year or someday down the road we can do that.
Awesome. Well,
I'm looking forward to that.
Someday, yeah. I can't wait to read it. I will definitely buy it. So take us back to the beginning. Were you a fan of the Trailblazers before you started working for the team?
Absolutely. I can remember listening to my very first Blazer game, and it was totally by accident. I was just kind of scanning the dial and came across Bill Shonley, and his voice and the way he called a game, it just had me mesmerized. And I remember this game specifically because it was when a big 7-foot center for the Blazers named Bill Smith broke his leg. And why I remember that part, I don't know. But I just know that hearing that game, hearing Sean's, it was, I was hooked. And I was a Portland Buckaroo fan. Now, I was 9 years old at the time. I was a fan of the Portland Buckaroos and really wasn't that familiar with the Blazers during their first season. And this game I'm talking about, I was in their second season. But, from then on, I was hooked. And they were not good in those early years. They were winning 18, 21 games a year. And I didn't care because I just was a big, big fan of the team.
And you really enjoyed those Shonley broadcasts.
Yes, I did. I lived and died with the Blazers, even though they were horrible. And even back then, when they would play a good game, it was in the 72-73 season, early in the season. They were playing the Milwaukee Bucks. These were the Bucks with Oscar Robertson and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. They were the elite team. They were playing at the Coliseum, and the Blazers were winning this game. And I went, and I got my little tape recorder and held the microphone right next to the little, like, 3-inch speaker in my clock radio and recorded a lot of that game. And little did I know that in time, that would become the oldest known broadcast of a Blazer game that had been saved anywhere. The Blazers did not record their broadcasts, and they actually didn't really even record the championship game. I recorded the championship game, and once again, years later, when I started working for the team, it's like, I have this, and they're like, wow, we have none of this stuff.
That's amazing. I can't believe they didn't tape their games. Do you know when they did start recording them?
They recorded some during that championship year, but it was the next year in the 77-78 season that they started recording the majority of them. And most Blazer fans know about the album that came out after the championship year called Blazer Mania.
Oh, yes.
And a lot of that album had to be reproduced by Sean's in a studio back in Boston.
Wow, what do you mean reproduced? Like
he had to recreate the calls.
Oh my gosh!
Because there were not tapes of those calls, so he had to go back and recreate those. And if you know Sean's really well and you know his play-by-play, like a lot of fans do, if you listen closely, you can tell where the energy isn't quite there, and it's almost like he's reading the play-by-play.
Did he, I mean, did he have to, like, pull it completely from memory, or did he?
I think it may have been completely by memory, and also going back and looking at the play-by-play of the game.
Right.
And Sean's would remember the game, and he could recreate a call.
Sure.
And so that's what he had to do on a lot of that album, was recreate it.
Wow, that's amazing. I actually, later on, I want to talk a little bit more about how times have changed since you started first working for them. But wow, it just boggles my mind that there was a time where people just didn't think about taping the games.
Going back to that Milwaukee game that I recorded, that also includes two of the earliest known recorded Rip City calls that Sean's did, both on Sidney Wick's jumpers late in the game. And so it made me feel kind of good after all these years, knowing that when I was 10 years old recording these games off the radio, that they would become such an important part of Blazer history, obviously I had no idea. And the reason why they didn't record the games, I think, is because maybe the same reason why a lot of old TV shows in the 50s and 60s weren't saved. Nobody thought they'd be worth anything or mean anything in years to come.
You must have been into the radio back then. Did you spend a lot of time listening to the radio? Did you listen to a lot of music and everything too?
Absolutely. I listened to the radio from my earliest memories are listening to the radio. And I'm the youngest of four, and my three older siblings bought lots of music. They bought lots of 45s. And so that's what I was brought up around, and listening to the old KISN, which was the big rocker in Portland, and that was my life, listening to the radio. And then the Blazer games got as time went on, you know, the Blazer games are what I live for. Friday nights, when there was a game, it was a big deal for me because I was able to have my own big bottle of pop and a bag of potato chips and listen to the games. And I didn't realize until years later that my parents would feel so bad for me, because I was such a huge Blazer fan and wanted them to win so much, and they were so bad.
Oh.
They were so bad during those years, and they felt bad for me because here I am, a huge fan. I'm just living and dying with the team, and they're just not doing anything. They're just really, really poor.
I love how you stuck with them. And it also sounds like you carried an interest in radio all your life. So did you know you wanted to have a career in radio?
Yes, absolutely. In seventh grade, we could go to any job that we thought we might want to do as a career. And I picked radio. And I went to KEX. And this is when I was, seventh grade, I believe. And they let me read a weather forecast on the radio. And it's like, oh man, this is great. And then in high school, I was in a program where we had to go and work an X amount of hours in a job that we wanted. And so they were able to finagle it to where I was able to work once again at KEX a couple of days a week as an intern. I was 16 years old. 16-year-old kids did not get to do internships at radio stations. And I basically stayed at KEX until 2000.
Wow. So what did you do there when you were first getting started?
Well, I would, they taught me the ins and outs of making commercials. And they took me around, like I would go on sales calls with people. Just, they gave me a well-rounded experience as far as to see what part of the business I wanted to be in. And, when I first started there, the studios for KEX were on 5th and Lincoln in downtown Portland. I started there in September of 78, and they were moving to studios that were on McAdam Avenue. And so one of my early jobs was helping pack up a radio station and helping it move. And the odd part is in time, I became the assistant program director, which is kind of the number two man in charge. And so we were doing a lot of work at our transmitter site, which is out on 82nd, out by Clackamas Town Center. You can see the big towers there. And there were some interns that we had go out there and clean up the building. It's, there's lots of junk out there. Go and get, you know, get rid of it. And I went out to check on them. And what do I find? But the exact same boxes that I had packed almost 20 years earlier had been stacked out there, still not unpacked. My writing on the box with, you know, commercials or whatever. And I opened up those boxes and went through them. And ironically, I found a lot of old Trailblazer commercials. It was like team picture night, you know, the first 5,000 fans when the Blazers played the Buffalo Braves, a team picture and all these different things. It was, so that kind of tied into the Blazer thing. And by that time, I was working for the Blazers as well as KEX. So I got a bunch of these and we had fun with those on the air.
I bet. Now, is there an archive somewhere of all this old Blazer recordings that you found?
All I can say is I hope so. When I left KEX in 2000, I did not take a lot of this with me. I did put some on cassette. I do have some that I have put on Facebook over the years that I have found. And it's just really cool to hear the old Portland Trailblazer shout. I'll put those on again. Maybe I can even give those to you guys at Blazers Edge, and you can maybe pop some of those on.
Oh, that would be so fun. What a fun way to remember all these, you know, these years ago.
Exactly.
So now you first started working with the Blazers in 1991.
I initially worked for them. I did the 84-85 season. And then at the end of the 85 season, they moved from KEX to KGW Radio. And since I was working at KEX, I didn't want to leave my job. So I left the Blazers after 1 year. And then they came back to KEX in 89. And I would help out when they would do tape delays. Folks, you remember the tape delay broadcast. They were a hassle to do. And it was like a three-man job. So I would help out with that. And then the gentleman who was the network producer at the time, he's passed away, so I don't want to speak ill of the dead, but he had a drinking problem. And there were a couple of times when he did not show up for broadcasts. And they gave him a lot of leniency and gave him lots of chances because they knew that he had a problem and they were going to try and help him with that. And it was finally during the 92 playoffs against the Jazz when he didn't show up for a game. And you can't do that. You can't do that for a preseason game, let alone Western Conference Finals. And so I had been producing the Oregon State games for football and basketball since 82, I believe. And I'd also been doing the tape delay stuff with the Blazers. They said, you know, we're going to let him go. Can you do it? Absolutely. So that was during the Western Conference Finals in 1992. And knock on wood, I have not missed a game since.
That's quite a streak. I read that you have done over 2,000 games.
It was during, we actually, I hadn't really thought about it until Wheels had mentioned how he had X number of consecutive games. And I thought, you know, I haven't missed a game. I wonder how much the... And so I added this up, and this was a number of years ago. But during the Clippers playoff series, I hit 2,200 straight. So I believe it's like 2,207 or something like that. I'm not really going to pay a whole lot of attention to it until we hit 2,500. Once we hit 2,500, that's a milestone.
That'll be, I hope we're all around to enjoy that. So when you first started working for the Blazers, you know, as the radio producer, what was your job like? What did you do?
It was a lot different than what it is now. To connect to a broadcast, for a road game, I would have to call back to a company in New York and they would connect me with whether it was Chicago Stadium or Boston Garden or the Forum or whatever, that's how we got on the air. And if we lost our signal, we were off for quite some time. If it was a road game, because I would have to call this company back in New York we lost our signal. They'd have to track it down, see what happened, get us connected again. I had no communication with our engineer who was running things for us on site in those cities. And so we'd have to talk a couple hours before airtime, and I would have to let him know how long every commercial break was.
Wow. So they had to time it.
They had
right.
to time it. They had to work with a stopwatch. When Shans would say the Blazers radio network, stopwatch would start. And if a commercial break is usually 90 seconds, maybe 95 seconds if we have an ID in there. But if maybe a commercial ran 32 seconds or something like that, it's our timing's off. And so we upcut Sean's coming back. And it there were times it didn't sound real great, but we made it work. Then a couple years, and we also had problems with delay. We would we did a talk show, Blazers Sports Talk, I believe was what it was called. We did that an hour before the pregame show. Steve Jones usually did that. And we would have problems with the phone lines going back and forth. If he was taking phone calls, there'd be an echo. And that was one problem that we would have. And it drove everybody nuts I could get real technical and tell you how I would work it, but just suffice to say, it was a hassle.
That's amazing. I mean, because I was like thinking, oh no, our voices are cutting a little bit out on this recording. And like, wow, what a great problem to have compared to some of the problems you had.
Oh, and then we went into, the best change we made was when we went to phone lines and ISDN lines. And that way I actually had an intercom with the site. So I could actually cue Sean's to, you know, when the commercials were done, and he could hear the commercials being played. In the days before that,
so prior to that, you couldn't communicate with him.
Could not communicate with him. He would not hear commercials, anything like that. And when this came about, we had basically an intercom where I could talk to them. And that was great. And then just 2 years ago, we went from those ISDN lines, and we now do everything via internet. And that the only with the ISDN phone lines, sometimes those would cut out, but it was a lot easier to reconnect. With internet now, we're always connected. The only problem is if there's a bad internet connection between us and Oakland or wherever, then we have some problems and we don't really have a backup. But those problems have been very few and far between. But sometimes a listener may hear, you mentioned that what we're doing here might break up a little bit. And that's what could happen on a radio broadcast for a road game. And if listeners hear that it's breaking up a little bit, that's a bad internet connection. So, but then there are times when there was a game in LA 2 years ago where it just sounded horrible. It was horrible. I'm not a technical guy, but I knew that there was a bad cord or a bad cable that was being used. And that game, it sounded just horrific. I was embarrassed to be associated with it because it sounded so bad. Our director of broadcasting came in and he heard it and he goes, "What is going on?" And they can hear me shouting down the hall because for me, it's my credibility on the line. I always feel when we're on the air, if we have a bad sounding broadcast, I take it personally. It's not my fault, most likely, but I still take it personally because I've been doing this for so many years. I know that if you're listening, a friend's listening, a relative's listening, and it sounds bad on the air, they're going, "Rich, what's the problem here? What's going on?"
Yeah, I mean, sure. We're used to, you know, being able to follow along and enjoy the games. And a lot of times we don't think about all the stuff that's going on in the background, just like that brings the game actually into our household. And it's just, you know, it's kind of mind boggling as you're talking about all the different things that, you know, back in the day had to fall in place. And even today, still with now that you're able to communicate directly with people, you still have so many things that need to all go right and be synchronized and, you know, have it all come together. So thank you for what you do, because I love listening to the radio broadcasts. I do watch them on TV, but but for years, I have three kids, and I used to drive them all over town to their soccer games and to everything. And I had those radio broadcasts in my car. And if I had not been able to listen to all those broadcasts while I was driving the kids around, I would have just been so sad to have missed everything. So I love listening to the radio shows. I'm wondering if we could go back a little bit more and talk about what it was like to work for the Blazers in those days. That was a really exciting time, right when you started working there at the 91-92 season. They were making those trips to the conference finals. That was a super exciting time. Do you have any favorite memories of those
Well,
years?
that was the year that one of my first games that I did when I came back there in '92 was doing the NBA Finals, and with the Bulls, and that was it was really kind of scary for me as well because I knew we had so many people listening, and I was still relatively new to the job. I knew how to run the equipment and everything like that, but it was still a case of if we lose our feed, we're in big trouble. And we have there's so much riding on this. And as far as a memorable game, I really can't pinpoint one. One thing that's very memorable to me that was that summer is when we broadcast the Tournament of the Americas at the Coliseum. And it was great to hear Shams do play-by-play of Barkley to Drexler to Stockton to Magic. It was really something, and that was a lot of fun.
So that was the tournament right before the Dream Team went to the Olympics,
Before
correct?
they went to Barcelona, yes.
Does a tape of that broadcast exist? That would be super interesting to listen to.
Yes, and I can maybe a little bit later we can discuss how Sean's gave me an awful lot of his archive material, and that includes a couple of Dream Team games.
Oh my gosh.
But
That's
that was a ton of
fantastic.
fun. Those games, I went back and listened to those, and it's just it was a fun time. That whole like summer of '92 was just so great if you're a Blazer fan, because you had the run to the championship. You had the NBA draft being held in Portland. You had the Tournament of the Americas. It was just an amazing time for a Blazer fan.
Yeah, those were peak years. I remember I actually was in Europe during the time of that of the when the finals were being played. I was in Greece, and I was there on a study program, and there happened to be another professor who was there with me, and he was kind of like I was studying classical history, and he was kind of like a rock star in the classical history world. But he and I were both Blazer fans. And so he and I would talk all the time about the Blazer games because we were trying to, we would like get the Athens paper and try to sort through and find out like the NBA news. And everyone just thought I was so cool because I was like friends with this like rock star professor archaeology. And I was like, no, we're talking about the Blazers. And then when I was flying back home, I flew home through Barcelona at the time that the athletes were all starting to head home too. That was a fun memory for me. But I have a question I've always wondered. Where did you get the nickname the captain?
That was all Eddie Doucette. Eddie came. He did 2 years of radio when Sean decided that he wanted to go to TV. And Eddie was our radio play-by-play guy for a couple of seasons in the mid-90s. And we were on a sponsor cruise on the Willamette. It was a lot of Blazer people and clients. And I was wearing a striped shirt. And Eddie loved nicknames. Eddie is the guy who created the name Skyhook for Jabbar's hook shot. He loved nicknames and calling people things. And so he said to me, he said, okay, you look like a captain out here on this ship. And he just started calling me captain. And
So that's where that
that's what
came
I came
from.
from, because I wore a striped shirt on this river cruise that we did for clients. If I had worn a plain colored shirt, the captain thing never would have come about. Our engineer in the arena for many, many, many years, over 40 years, Dave Bell, he called Dave Sound Swell Dave Bell. He came up with nicknames for everybody. For Mike Rice, he's the one who came up with the wild one.
Speaking of Eddie Doucette and Mike Rice, was that when Mike Rice got ejected from the game? Was that during that period when he was working with Eddie
Doucette? Yes, that was. It was against the Pacers. And actually, what's kind of funny is that I just heard the play of that again for the first time in many, many years. But that game, I remember Eddie was losing his voice. He had laryngitis. And so before the game, we told Mike that you're going to have to kind of carry some of the load here for Eddie because of his voice. And so it's been so long ago, I don't remember the specific play, but I can hear when we're in commercial, I can hear what's going on site. So I can talk to the guys and things like that. And all of a sudden I hear Rice arguing with somebody, which really in those days wasn't that much of a rarity because Rice would get into it with fans and things like that. And I'm hearing you're wrong. And someone yelling, Mike, you just keep doing your piddly job. And Rice is going back and forth. And I hear, get out of here. Get that guy out of here. It's like, what in the world is going on here?
Oh my gosh. And you're just sitting in the
I'm listening going, what is going on? And I'm thinking that Rice is getting into a fight with a fan.
Oh my gosh.
And we come back and Eddie says, fans, you won't believe what just happened. And he comes back and describes it. And it's like, oh, man, Rice has got kicked out of the game by a referee. And my first thought was, geez, what's going on here? But my second thought immediately was, how is Eddie going to do the rest of this game? Because his voice was not good. And as it turns out, Rice snuck back in for the post-game show. He was ejected from the arena, but he came back in. And I think his thinking was, the refs are gone. What do they care? And Eddie and I are telling Mike to, you know, don't do this. You know, you could get in big trouble. You're not supposed to be back in here. And Mike being Mike, he just, they don't care. And so he did the rest of the post-game show, and that was that. But I remember hearing the argument off the air.
Oh,
and it's like,
gosh,
what is going on here? And then talking about piddly jobs and you get out of here. And that was it, because he didn't have his headset on. So I kind of had to hear it from a distance. And so, but I got to hear the whole thing go down off the air.
Oh my God. How did Eddie Doucette, did he finish the game even with laryngitis?
Yeah, Eddie being the true pro that he is. And Eddie is, I don't know if people know this, he's now in the Basketball Hall of Fame as well as Sean's. So being the pro that he is, he carried on and he did the game.
Wow, that's a great story. Well, speaking about Mike Rice, the wild one, fans are going to be seeing a big change this season to the TV side of the Blazer broadcasts with Mike and Mike being replaced and Kevin Calabro coming in. You were around when Brian Wheeler replaced Bill Shonley on the radio broadcast.
Yes.
That was another really huge transition. So what was that like?
Well, the one thing that I think of in retrospect is that the one thing that Wheels, that really helped him, is he came in during the 98-99 season, and that was a lockout season. And so NBA games didn't get played until, I believe, January of 99. So Wheels had a lot of time to kind of get to know fans get to know him, because he was hired during in the summer of 98. And so he was able to be on our courtside show and people got to know him. And I think that helped him out quite a bit. He brought lots of energy. As people know, you can't get much more energy than Wheels. But There were going to be those people to this day. This was almost 20 years ago. And to this day, people can't believe that they would make a change with the Shawns. But Wheels came in there. He was a pro. He knew that he was replacing a legend and that fans weren't going to be happy. But to his credit, he went out. He tried to meet fans as much as he could so they could know him. And I think that really cushioned the blow.
Interesting. I didn't know that he went out and met fans and you know deliberately was on court side so that he could get people to know him. Did the like Blazers, I mean, because it was a lockout season, so they probably couldn't have events or anything. Like, how did do you remember how Brian Wheeler kind of worked himself into the
I don't
community?
remember. I can't give you exact events or things like that, but I just know that during that time, they couldn't have players go out and make appearances. So they would have Wheels go out and make appearances. And they would team him up with Steve Jones or Mike Rice, the people who the fans knew. And so it by the time we finally started playing games that season, people had 6 months to get to know Wheels. Still upset with Sean's being gone. And the one thing that's consistent in broadcasting is change. And so Sean's wasn't going to be around forever. I'm not going to be around forever. We're not, none of us are going to be around at our jobs forever. And it's just, I just really to this day commend Wheels on the great way that he was able to accept that, know what he was getting into. And so by the time we got on the air and started doing games, we were able to hit the ground running.
Yeah, that's real interesting. It sounds like he knew that not only was, you know, he going to have to be really good at his job of being play by play, but those relationships are very, very important. And it sounds like he really valued them, the relationships with the
And one
fans.
thing that also helped Wheels that season, the Blazers were an extremely good team that year. And if when I've learned through the years, when the team is not doing well, fans will look at anything to vent. So if the Blazers weren't a good team that year, Wheels may have had a lot more heat piled on him. And not justified, but just it's a way that fans naturally they react. They want to find a scapegoat, and that's Wheels could have very easily have felt that.
Yeah, could have gone the other way. That was a fun team to watch once it finally started up. That was is that the that's the year we went to the Western Conference Finals and played the Spurs? Is
Yes,
that?
yes,
Yeah.
yeah.
That's right. I remember listening to that game, the when San Antonio beat the Blazers in that final game, the announcer saying, "Congratulations, Jerome. Now go get your ring," because that was Jerome's, I think that was that year. That was the year that Jerome was playing with the Spurs.
It's I have to tell you, through all these years, they start to kind of run together.
So you've worked with several different play-by-play announcers, Bill Shonley, Eddie Doucette, and then I think you went back to the Shawns, and then Brian
Yes, so
Wheeler.
I have worked with every radio guy in Blazer history.
Okay, that's right. Yeah, because Bill Shonley was the only one there when that had been there the whole time when you came. What was special about each one of those
Well,
announcers?
Sean's is just it's the Shawns. I mean, I'm like any kid that grew up in the 70s listening to Shawns. He was the guy. There were during those times for many, many years, there were only maybe 12, 15 Blazer broadcasts on TV a year. So you had to rely on radio. And Shawn's was like your favorite disc jockey. You knew him, you knew all about him. He's the guy that brought the games to you. He was the Shawn's. And actually, I mean, it was Dave Twarczyk that gave him that nickname, by the way. But being able to work with someone who I grew up idolizing was just beyond my wildest dreams. And to this day, if I see Sean's at a game, I'll still tell him how much he meant to me. We've known each other for 25 years, and I still idolize the man because he's an icon. There are kids who are my age who are going to feel the same way about Wheels. They grew up listening to Wheels. He's the guy who is bringing Blazer basketball to them. It's just to me, there are times I still find it unbelievable that I still call Sean's a very close friend. Every year at Christmas, the first Christmas card we get is from Bill and Dottie. It's like, man, and then going back to the tapes that I was mentioning, this was 3 years ago, I believe it was. We were having dinner in the media room, and I was sitting with Adam Bjornsson, and we're just there talking about whatever, having dinner, and Sean's comes up behind me, and he has a very serious look on his face, and he does the same thing he always does, puts his arm around me, goes, "Rich, my boy, I got something, I got him," and he says, "You know, I'm not going to be around here forever. I don't plan on leaving anytime soon, but I'm not going to be around here forever. And I just want to know if I could give you all of my archive tapes that I have through the years."
Oh my gosh.
And I'm like, gee, shut, what, huh? Yeah, I was dumbfounded. And I look at Adam, and Adam, his mouth is wide open. It's like, whoa. And I said, "God, I'd be honored, Sean's." And he just said, "I don't know of anybody who could take better care of these and preserve them like you could." And so the next day, he gives me the first delivery of all of these cassettes. They're on the desk in my studio. And there are tapes that he had recorded. Now, the team may not have recorded games, but Sean's would. He'd give a tape to an engineer and say, "Tape this," from the championship season. There is the game when the Blazers beat the Warriors when they clinched the playoffs for the first time. And Bill Walton is the postgame guest. When they used to do center court interviews after games, Bill Walton was the guest, and I have that. There is when Sean's did play-by-play of the NBA All-Star Game in, I believe, 1975. That tape is in there. There's all kinds of things like that. There are some that were newer from the 90s that aren't as special. They don't have the historical value. But these games from the championship series, one of the tapes on there, it has written on there, Ramsey talk show, June 5, 1977. And it was the Jack Ramsey coaches show that he recorded on the day of the championship. And wow. It's so funny on there. It's written, "Good show." Well, I would think so, but
yeah.
On this tape, you have a couple of seconds of Sean's and Coach Ramsey just kind of talking about things. And then Sean's, "Okay, here we go. In 3, 2, 1. And that whole thing is on this tape. And that to me is like, oh, it's gold.
And yeah, that's, so you have them all on cassette.
Well,
I've
the first thing I did was transfer them on to, and so they're all digital now. So yeah. And so I gave Sean's CDs of those, to his son who lives over in Hawaii, I gave him copies, and and now the Blazers will have those forever.
And are they all cataloged?
Not there aren't enough yet to be cataloged. Sean's he's going to be getting, it was near the end of last season, he mentioned how he has a lot more to give me. This was just kind of like he filled up a big envelope and gave it to me. So as much as it would fit in an envelope is what he gave me on this one time. But listening to those, it's just, I can't believe that Sean's, I'm the kid that grew up listening to him, idolizing him, and here he is giving me his personal archives.
Yeah, he's entrusting you with everything that he meant to you.
Right, that's exactly right.
That's, you know, to have, you know, formed a solid relationship over the years with someone that you idolize so much, that's really exciting. And I imagine you're going to have more deliveries in the future, and it'll be like, you know, the best gift that you could imagine.
It'll be like
every
Christmas.
Every time one of those envelopes lands on your desk, you're probably heart probably going to start racing.
Absolutely. It's just a case of what is it? And there was also one tape that he gave me where the tape was all eaten up and it was out of the case and everything. And "Rich, I don't know if you can fix this, but I want to give it to you anyway." And so I was able to fix it, and it was one of the playoff games in 77 against the Denver Nuggets, which was round two of that championship run.
I have a question about in the past. Because I know that coming into the season, now Wheels is going to be on his own. He's not going to have an analyst working with him. Did I understand that correctly?
That is correct.
So have there been other times where you only had a play-by-play and not an analyst alongside?
Well, the one thing that comes to mind is when Wheels was fighting an illness a couple of years ago, and we ended up carrying the TV broadcast, and we had Antonio Harvey go and join Mike and Mike on TV. But as far as not having an analyst, well, there was that game when Rice got kicked out.
Right.
One thing that people may forget is that for many years, up until I believe the championship season, there was not an analyst for road games. There was an analyst for home games. There was Terry Dissinger. There was Daryl Imhoff. There was Jim Marsh in those early years. But Sean's did not have an analyst on road games. And so that is what really comes to mind, because there's from the time that Steve Jones started with Sean's in the championship season, went Sean's, and then, boy, there may have been someone between Steve Jones and Dave Twardzik, but Twardzik, Petrie, then Rice. And so
so we always had somebody alongside him starting with that championship
year.
Yeah,
you always had someone home and away.
Well, I'm interested to see how that's going to go. Not having someone to talk with during those games, that's going to be interesting. Now, do they have somebody who's sitting there with them, providing them like with statistics?
Yeah, there's a statistician there for every game, home and away. And there's also we'll have a studio host again this year, and so that person can give them information. One thing I try and do when I have time is try and toss Wheels info. And now with technology, it's so easy. I can put it in his head. I can send him a tweet. I can do a Facebook private message. And so the information, I don't have to wait for a commercial break to talk to him.
Do you talk in his ear during the broadcasts?
Yes. Yep.
You do.
Yep.
So you're saying things like, we got a commercial coming
well,
up.
Well, he'll know. And there, he pretty much knows that. There are times, though, this little inside scoop for listeners. What we do is the way that the NBA format is worked, and this is for radio, TV, no matter what. If you're watching a game on TNT, same thing. We have two commercial breaks in the first quarter, three commercial breaks in the second quarter, two in the third quarter, and three in the fourth. And they're taken at certain times, unless there are some times when, depending on what the game is like, all the breaks are taken, maybe with 8 minutes still to go in the quarter. And for a home game, that's when I might be able to go out and stand by the Blazer bench and watch a couple minutes of the game. But at the same time, I have highlights that I'm having to cut up, so I can't be out there for very long. Something big happens, I look up on the clock and I go, okay, Lillard had the three-pointer with 7:52 to go, and I have to come back and do that. Or that's when I can go and get a soda or use the restroom. But what I have to do is always tell Wheels when we come out of this last break, no more breaks. No more breaks. Uh-huh. Because he gets so excited, he may forget where he's at, and there's another timeout taken, and whereas he should be keeping it, he could toss it to a break. I wouldn't be there, and so
it would just be silence.
There'd be silence, or worse, you never know if it was a bad game, colorful language. So I don't want that, so I always let our engineer and Wheels know, last break, no more breaks. I'm stepping out, no more breaks. And because once again, the last thing I want is for him to toss it to a break. I'm not there, and who knows?
And everybody just keeps talking, saying the things they say.
Yeah. Think of a conversation you would have over dinner, and you wouldn't want that on the air.
Sure. Now I'm curious, though. I'm wondering about those, how you do those cuts, because I, the next day after games, depend on listening to the highlights of the radio broadcast, because I can never find, like, the whole radio broadcast to listen to, but I can always find the highlights that you put together. How do you do those so quickly?
Well, it's, I have two machines going at the same time. I have what we call the Cool Edit program, which is doing it on the computer. And I also have a little portable editor as well, which I've had for 15 years. It's archaic, but it does a great job. And so on the old archaic one, I find a highlight, Wheels does something, I stop the tape, Lillard three-pointer, 53-42. And so I know what the score is and everything. And I edit that down. And so it's on there, you number it, and it's right there. On the Cool Edit part of things, I have to send highlights to the NBA. And so there's an NBA hotline where other teams can go and get those. And then also we have the Blazers have their own private site for our affiliates where they can go and get highlights. And so I'm doing highlights for us to play back on the air. I'm also doing highlights that go to the NBA, and I have highlights that go for our affiliates. And so it's very, very busy. And there are times when if the Blazers are making a big run and they're, you know, plays are bam, 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 I just can't edit something within a couple of seconds. I have to, you know, kind of stop down and do this. And the one game I'll remember is the big Brandon Roy game when he had the 18 points in the fourth quarter against the Mavericks. And that was probably the most hectic game for me because I didn't have time to edit things. And I would stop down and title something and start recording it again. And something, Roy would do something else.
Right.
And that's where we would usually, at the end of the game, okay, second half highlights, like, no, whoa, I'm going to need about 20 minutes to chop all this stuff up and get it sounding good.
Yeah, you guys keep talking.
Yeah, you guys keep going. Let's take a break. Let's do whatever we need to do. But that's good. That's a good kind of being rushed and hurried and everything. There are some blowout games where there's really nothing, but we have a highlight segment. So, you know, every team is going to have a stinker game, but we still have highlights that we have to play. So I might have, instead of 10 or 11 highlights that are great stuff, it might be 5 highlights of just say, an Ed Davis put back. Yeah. It's not exciting, but it's a basket. And you just have to, roll with it. And another game that comes to mind where I was just ultra busy was the Golden State game that the Blazers won by whatever, I forget the margin back in
January.
The one in January. And that was amazing. And for that game as well, I try and get those to the NBA immediately because I know when people are seeing the Blazers are defeating the Warriors by 33 points, they're going to want to know, they want the highlights for their own broadcasts. And so I'd have to get those to them immediately. So it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of times it can be very hectic, but hectic is good.
Generally a good thing when you have too many highlights and you have to cull them down rather than let me find one, just one. Well, I hope we have lots of games like that this season where you're super busy because there's so many highlights. Do you have any thoughts about the team's off season and what you're looking forward to about next
I think
season?
It's going to be another great season. People may think I'm nuts, but you were talking about watching one of the ESPN 30 on 30 shows. I watched the one on the Detroit Pistons on the Bad Boys a couple of weeks ago.
That's great.
And I'm thinking, you know, this Blazer team, we don't have the I don't want to say morons, but we don't have the Rick Mahorn idiot kind of player, but we're developing the same kind of player. They developed the backcourt with Isaiah and Dumars. We have CJ and Damian. They got the big guy in the middle in Lambeer. And you know, is Azili, could he be that kind of guy? You know, it's just I saw some parallels there that I don't think you had to think too far out of the box to think, wow, could this be the Blazers in a few years? They kept building year by year by year until they finally hit their peak. And I look at the Blazers and how they're building year by year by year. They're not going for the big heavy hitter, big free agent. They're building it the way that I think a great team is built. And I'm very excited for this year. I think Azeli has potential of being a Whiteside, if not better. And his attitude is so great. We had him on our Courtside show a few weeks ago. And what a great guy. And if you don't follow Festus Azeli on Twitter, do it. Do you follow him, Tara?
Okay. I do. Yeah, I second that recommendation.
He has some great stuff on there. And this is maybe a little inside thing as well, but it's a way that over the years you can kind of tell what kind of a person these guys are. We had Evan Turner on our show after he was signed. Then we had Festus Azeli as well. And I need to call these guys and I get them on the show. And then what I will always do, no matter who the guest is, I'll always shoot them a text back. Hey, thanks for the time. Appreciate it. Yeah, have a good night. And with Turner and Azeli, I did the thank you and I did, hey, welcome to Rip City. A lot of these people will say, you know, over the years, you get a, hey, thanks, no problem, if they answer at all. Both Evan Turner and Festus Azeli shot me back a text where it was, hey, my pleasure, brother, looking forward to working with you. It's going to be a great year. They actually sent out an actual response on a text and not just a thank you. And to me, that shows that these guys are real people. And maybe I'm overanalyzing it, but to me, it seems like to actually sit there and send out a text that's four or five lines is it shows a lot more personality than just thanks.
That's good to know. I mean, it sounds like, you know, they seem like they're thoughtful guys who are thinking about not like, okay, this is just a job, but they're thinking about, oh, I'm going to need to have relationships with people that, you know, are together with this team because we're going to have, you know, we're going to have time together. We're going to, you know, it's about more than just me coming in and putting up points. It's about me coming in and being a part of this organization. It's always great to hear that players are putting in that extra thought.
Well, from our standpoint, these are people who are brand new to the organization, brand new to the city. And I want them to think that, hey, you're not just some guy that we had on our show just for the heck of it because you're on the team. We want you to know that we appreciate your time, that welcome to town. We're real people here. We're good people here. And hopefully that makes a little bit of an impact.
Yeah, I hope so. I'm really looking forward to the season. I personally, in my opinion, I think staying the course, that's what I thought we were going to do, even though there was a lot of talk about a lot of different free agents that might possibly come. I was feeling like we were going to stay the course, that we were going to continue to develop these guys that Neil Olshey brought in and that he's committed to them for, you know, at least a few more years before we make any big, big major changes.
Well, see, and that's it too. You have all of these core players who are going to be here for a long time. And think back to the championship run that the early 90 Blazers had. You had Clyde, you had Terry, you had Jerome, who were here for a long time.
Yeah.
And then Duck came in a couple years later, and it was just one piece that they needed, and that piece was Buck Williams, and bam. But you had the core of that team had been together for a long time.
Right, and you got to know the core of that team so that when you did bring in somebody, you knew which piece you needed to bring in. You weren't just like, you know, just trying to grab whoever would come. You would know who the piece is that is going to fit in and complete the whole, you know, put the last piece in place for the whole puzzle. So I'm ready to be patient for a couple more years.
Now Tara, I do have a question for you, Tara. Okay, now do you remember who the Blazers gave up to get Buck Williams?
Oh my gosh, I don't.
Sam Bowie.
Oh, that's right.
And people always complain about the Sam Bowie, Michael Jordan thing. We could go on for an hour about that. But just let me say, the Blazers didn't need Jordan. You had Jim Paxson, you had Clyde Drexler. You didn't need another guard. You needed a big man. They got fined for tampering with Olajuwon. They needed a big man. Anyhow, I just found it ironic that Sam Bowie is the guy that we traded to get that final piece. And in time, that final piece led us to the finals against who? Michael Jordan.
It's amazing how history plays out. I mean, when we're in the moment, we just are sure that we know what's best. And then time goes by, and it's always so cool to see like how things play out, because often they play out, completely different than, you know, everybody expects. But a lot of times somebody planned it from the beginning.
Absolutely.
So it's very interesting. So we're just about out of time, but I have one more topic that I wanted to
sure.
cover. There are a lot of people that work for Blazers Edge and write for Blazers Edge and who read Blazers Edge who are big Portland wrestling fans. There's a big cross section there. So I have to, full disclosure, I don't know much about Portland wrestling, but
you
I
don't know who Playboy that, Buddy Rose is?
Well, I do now.
How about Jimmy Snuka?
I did
Lonnie Mays, Matt Savage, Beauregard, the Grappler, Rip Oliver. Come on.
I'm going to have to turn you over to those guys, and you guys can do a whole Portland wrestling podcast. I know that we've got some writers who would just love, love, love doing that. But I told them, you know, you guys helped me come up with a question that is like an intersection of Portland wrestling and the Blazers. Mm-hmm. And so they told me that there is some lore out there about Michael Thompson when he was a Trailblazer being a big Portland wrestling fan. What can you tell me about that?
Well, he was a big pro wrestling fan in general. And Portland wrestling owners, the Don Owen family, they were having a 60th anniversary show at the Coliseum.
Okay.
Usually their matches were held at the Portland Sports Arena, which was out on North Chautauqua. But this big thing, they were bringing in a bunch of the main people from around. How about Roddy Piper?
Roddy Piper and Playboy Buddy Rose were like arch rivals, right?
And they brought them back to have.
They were coming back for this big thing.
And they had a lot of the other big names from the world of wrestling that didn't necessarily work for Portland, but they sold out the Coliseum. And they had Michael Thompson kind of help promote it. And there was one night when Michael came on the Portland Wrestling TV show to promote it. And I have video of him actually up in the crow's nest. That was where they did the interviews. And he's up there talking about it, and he was the honorary timekeeper that night. So he was at the matches. And so he was there, and he was on TV on Portland Wrestling promoting the big extravaganza at the Coliseum a few days later.
Did any of the other Blazers, were they fans? Did they come in, or was it, was there a, you know, crossover there?
Not during those days.
Okay.
I can tell you that when Rasheed Wallace found out that he was traded from the Blazers, he was in the Rose Garden watching the WWF event.
When he found out
the night that he was traded, he was watching a WWF event inside the Rose Garden.
Wow.
Brian Wheeler is also a huge wrestling fan.
Oh, is that right?
Huge, huge wrestling fan.
Is he like secretly making like all these wrestling references during his broadcast that I'm not picking up on because I don't know enough about wrestling?
I don't think so, but he goes to, he tries to go to all the WWE things when they are, when they're in town and he's in town. And I've given him an awful lot of my Portland wrestling videos that I've restored over the years. And just so he kind of gets an idea of the great Portland wrestling stuff that we got to watch every Saturday night here in Portland.
I remember a couple years ago in arena, they had a question, you know, how they asked the Blazers the questions and they play them during the breaks. And one of the questions was who would be, I think it was like, who would be your tag team partner?
Uh-huh.
They asked different Blazers, like, who would be your tag team partner in pro wrestling? And I remember several of them, without hesitation, said Myers Leonard, which I thought was really interesting. I was like, what do we not know about Myers Leonard that so many of his teammates claim that he would be a great partner for professional wrestling?
Wow.
Do you think there's any Trailblazers that have good wrestling potential?
Um, I couldn't tell. You know, wrestling has changed so much, and I'm like you now. I don't watch the current product because to me it's just it's not the same as the Portland wrestling days when you go down the sports arena and it smelled like burnt popcorn and old cigarettes and things like that. It was just those fans listening who were wrestling fans and they went to that building. They know what I'm talking about. It was a place unlike any other, and it is now a church. It's a church hall. Yes. Yeah. It went from Portland wrestling, blood and beer and sweat and everything to a church rec hall.
Well, I am definitely interested in learning more about just the historical, like what it was like back in the day. Because when I mentioned it to my husband, he's like, his eyes lit up. He's like, oh, yeah, I watched all those old Portland wrestling shows. And like him and all his buddies used to sit around and watch them. So clearly,
well,
I don't know what I was
doing. Fans are interested, they obviously know who Playboy Buddy Rose is. God rest his soul. Very good friend. And when he passed away in 2009, he recorded everything. He recorded all kinds of stuff, and including almost every Portland wrestling show that he was on. And his garage was full of boxes of videotapes, unmarked videotapes. And so his wife wanted to get rid of them. And so she said, what can I do with these? Should I just give them to Goodwill? And it's like, whoa, no. I would get physically ill if I knew that somebody bought one of those tapes for 25 cents and they recorded over a Jay Youngblood Buddy Rose match with American Idol. It just, and so I took all these tapes, well over 1,000 of them, like I said, unmarked, and spent hours and hours and hours documenting what's on these. And so thanks to Buddy and his widow giving me these tapes, there was very little Portland wrestling footage available, and now I was able to restore maybe about 400 hours worth.
Wow, you have so much important Portland history in your, you know, wherever you're on your hard drives or whatever right now. It's kind of mind-boggling to think of all of these things that you've had access to and that you're restoring and trying to figure out how you can share those with people. That's I would love to hear more about that sometime, or maybe I'll connect you with some of the guys from Blazers Edge because to talk more about Portland wrestling, because I'm sure they would love to hear more stories. Well, for now, we've pretty much reached the end of our time, and I wanted to thank you so much. I don't think I've ever said wow as many times during a podcast recording. I'll probably have to edit some of those out because it's going to sound really repetitive, but you had some really fantastic information about the historical Portland Trailblazers. We got to talk a little bit about the ones now. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you very much for asking. I really enjoyed this.
Well, great. Like, go Blazers. We're going to have an awesome I think you're absolutely right. I think we're going to have an awesome season. And I just want to remind the listeners that we've got, we've got two podcasts that come out on Blazers Edge every week, one on the weekend edition and one on Tuesdays. So I encourage everybody to listen to those and, give us questions. If you have more questions that this particular podcast created, put them in the comments, and if there's anything that Rich can answer, I'll send them on to you, Rich, and maybe we can answer
That'd
some
be
more
fantastic.
Questions if people have them. Awesome. Well, thanks again so much.
My pleasure.
I really appreciate it.